From Tidbits, on Monday the 29th of October 2012, this is iPhone 5 the best yet, but still an iPhone, by Steve McCabe. The website of Telecom, one of the two cell phone networks in New Zealand offering Apple's new iPhone 5, advertises the device as the thinnest, lightest iPhone yet. Could this really be the best they could manage to say about the latest release of the most successful smartphone in the short history of smartphones? I had to find out. I wanted so badly to be impressed by the iPhone 5. I remember well, it was only 5 years ago, the excitement that surrounded the unveiling and eventually the release of the original iPhone. I remember bringing mine home from the Apple store where I used to work, the unwrapping, the anticipation as I opened the box to reveal the elegant packaging. The entire process was almost sacramental. Since then, I've owned three more iPhone models. I skipped the iPhone 4. Even now, every time a new iPhone lands on my desk, there remains something a little special about the act of opening it. There is, after all, a reason why unboxing videos proliferate across the internet. The iPhone 5 continues this tradition, its packaging crafted almost as carefully as the device itself. Out of the box and into the hand. This time, a review unit of the iPhone 5 arrived courtesy of Apple New Zealand. The packaging, I noticed, was a little bit longer and deeper than previous boxes had been. One look at the iPhone 5 suggests a possible reason. It's tall. Placed next to my iPhone 4S, it looks noticeably longer, and its height also makes it look narrower despite having the same width. At any rate, its appearance is something of a departure from its predecessors. From the front, it looks quite similar, dimensions notwithstanding, but from the side, the differences start to show up. The metal bezel that surrounds the iPhone 4 and 4S models has been, at least in the black model Apple sent me, coated with black powder. There have been reports of the iPhone 5 looking scuffed and with powder missing out of the box, but my sample had no such flaws. As we would expect from Apple, it looks, and feels in the hand, rather elegant. The iPhone 4's glass back has been replaced with aluminium, again quite stylishly powder-coated, with two black glass strips, one at the top and one at the bottom, to provide radio transparency for the iPhone 5's various antennae. In the hand, it feels very light, almost insubstantial. While Apple did the right thing in abandoning the plasticky feel of the iPhone's 3G and 3GS, the thinness and lack of heft of the later models leaves them feeling rather slight. If the iPhone's 4 and 4S felt lightweight, the iPhone 5 is positively sylph-like. That said, the impression of lightness doesn't really last. You become accustomed to it quickly. Lightning strikes. Next out of the box is the new 8-pin lightning cable, and here again is a major change. Since 2003 and the third generation of the iPod, a proprietary 30-pin dock connector has become standard across not just Apple's range of iDevices, but also across an entire universe of third-party accessories. Apple's decision to abandon this entrenched technology in favour of the new lightning connector has upset a large number of people who have invested in docking stations, speakers, and cradles that use the old 30-pin connector. The new Lightning connector is surprisingly small, comparable in width to a micro USB plug, but rather thinner and flatter. Its primary benefit to the user is reversibility. It can be inserted either way round, makes for easier insertion in the dark or without looking. I presume the benefit to Apple lies in freeing up the internal and external space previously occupied by the dock connector and related electronics when designing iOS devices. At least with devices like the new iPod Nano, the small lightning connector feels worthwhile, as opposed to the minimally different MagSafe 2 connector used in the last generation of MacBooks. It's also likely that the new connector will make possible other capabilities, such as USB 3.0 speeds. The iPhone 5 is still limited to USB 2.0 performance. And Apple will be making HDMI and VGA cables using lightning interfaces. This is a major change for the entire Apple ecosystem. Anyone who owns a speaker system, a dock, or even a charging cable for an existing iPhone, and who hopes to use it with a new iPhone 5, will either have to buy an adapter from Apple, useful for chargers perhaps, less useful for in-car systems and cradle-type devices, or replace said kit, which may not even be possible for some time, given that Apple is having trouble keeping up with demand for the standard Lightning to USB cables, along with their $29 Lightning to 30-pin adapter, and $39 lightning to 30-pin cable adapter. Since there's an authentication chip in Lightning cables, there will likely be no unlicensed Lightning options that provide full functionality. In the end, the 30-pin connector had a long run, but it's not surprising either that Apple would want to move to something smaller, or that Apple would want to create either a custom connector in favour of using something standard, like micro-USB. A Lightning to micro-USB adapter is available as a separate purchase in Europe to comply with laws that require all phones to be able to charge using that plug format. Nor is it surprising that Apple would cut over so completely, even when the benefit to users is relatively small. The main misstep seems to have been Apple's inability to provide sufficient quantity of the various cables and adapters, and the lack of even licensed third-party accessories for the iPhone 5. The smaller Lightning connector enabled Apple to move the headphone jack to the bottom of the iPhone 5. I have yet to see an explanation of this change. It seems entirely gratuitous, at least from the user perspective. Having the headphone jack on top of the iPhone made sense to me, at least. When my iPhone 4S is in my shirt pocket, its usual out and about home, I can plug in a headset and still have the phone right way up in my pocket, and when an alert calls for my attention, reading the display is quite easy. Similarly, when I'm driving, the iPhone 4S sits in a cup holder, connected to my car stereo via the top of the phone. The relocation of the audio jack to the bottom means that the iPhone 5 sits inverted in the holder, which isn't as convenient as I'd like. The main use case I can think of that might support the bottom position is dropping the iPhone into a trouser pocket, where it makes sense to have it top down and face in, thus exposing the bottom-located headphone jack, so it is properly orientated in your hand when you pull it out. I suppose there might also be people who make FaceTime calls while using earbuds. The bottom position might be better if you're holding the iPhone 5 out in front of you. The remaining item on the bottom of the iPhone 5 is the speaker, which is a bit louder than the iPhone 4S's. Whether or not it's noticeably better sounding is a different matter, but the amount of sound it can pump out is impressive. More pixels, Scotty. So let's turn the iPhone 5 on and see how it works. Well, it's an iPhone. All the traditional iPhone features I've come to expect are present. The screen, of course, is the first major difference, and it looks good. The colours are richer, more saturated than they were even on the iPhone 4S, a screen that still looks very good. But the major draw is the size of the screen. Apple's extended it vertically, enough to add an extra row of app icons on the iOS home screen. This is certainly welcome, but it's not exactly revolutionary. In fact, another row of app icons and folders being able to hold more apps does help the significantly overloaded home screen interface, but seeing an extra email message in a list or being able to read a bit more of an ebook before I swipe to the next page hasn't made that much of a difference to my user experience. Watching video is likely the main reason for the change. The screen's proportions now match HD video, and videos can be viewed full screen without letterboxing. A noticeable improvement. Letterboxing is precisely what happens when an app's developer hasn't yet caught up with the new hardware. Many apps have already been updated to take advantage of the larger screen, but there are plenty that still think they're running on a 4S. The iPhone 5 simply displays these apps in the centre of the screen with black bars above and below. The black bars are black enough that you seldom notice, and regardless, all apps in active development undoubtedly will be updated for the new screen size soon. The larger hardware, for me at least, is quite comfortable to use. I tend to use my iPhone two-handed, supporting it in my left hand while operating it with the fingers of my right. For me, then, there is no significant difference between this iPhone and the last. Some women I know have complained that the iPhone 4's form factor was hard enough to fit into the pockets of women's clothes. The iPhone 5's extra height will make it all the harder. And of course, all iPhone 5 owners who want cases will have to purchase new ones. There will be a plethora soon. Camera, network, and battery. By the time I had charged and synced the phone, the weather had cleared up, so I went outside to play with the camera. The camera on the iPhone 4S has been very well received, and Apple wisely refrained from tampering with the 4S's camera. The iPhone 5 sports basically the same hardware. I took a couple of photos of my wife's cat, holding my iPhone 4S in one hand and Apple's loaner iPhone 5 in the other, for a literal side-to-side comparison. On the iPhone screens, the iPhone 5's images were noticeably richer, but when I compared the phones from both devices on my laptop, there was little appreciable difference. The iPhone 4S's camera was very good. The iPhone 5's essentially identical camera is every bit as good. Video, similarly, is comparable in quality, with the addition of somewhat improved stabilization thanks to the iPhone 5's beefier A6 chip. I have so far avoided mention of long-term evolution, or LTE, the absurdly fast cellular data connectivity protocol that Apple finally incorporated into the iPhone 5. LTE is often referred to as 4G, though 4G is now somewhat meaningless from a technical standpoint. That omission is, alas, because I have no way to test it. I have the enormous good fortune to live in New Zealand, but paradise is not perfect. As I have whinged about previously, see Paying by the Bit, Internet Access in New Zealand, from the 15th of January 2010, internet connectivity in New Zealand is not all it might be, and LTE is no exception. Neither Telecom nor Vodafone, Apple's two resale partners and the two main cell phone networks in New Zealand, nor indeed 2degrees, their only rival here, have or have plans to build a 4G network in New Zealand. Thus, fast networking remains a feature available only to those users who happen to live in markets, the United States, the UK, even Australia, that happen to have 4G connectivity. That said, I'm told that when you combine the iPhone 5 with an LTE-enabled carrier with sufficient backhaul bandwidth and not too many other users, the performance is quite impressive. In tests of Wi-Fi and 3G cellular data, I was able to perform. The iPhone 5 and 4S performed identically. At the end of all this testing, there was one more thing to look at. My iPhone 4S has, for all its many fine features, one serious weakness: its battery life. I complained about this in Apple's International Obfuscation on 28th of June 2012, and I was hopeful that the iPhone 5 might have the solution. I questioned iOS's usage reports, because while watching it today, it reported 6 hours and 14 minutes of use since the last full charge. But it hasn't been that long since I unplugged it after waking up this morning. Nevertheless, with what seems like reasonable usage, mostly on Wi-Fi, with location services on for a few apps, but Bluetooth off, I'm down to 28% capacity remaining. From those who have been living with the iPhone 5 for some time, it sounds as though battery life is roughly similar to the iPhone 4S. Sometimes a little better, sometimes a bit worse. For some, it has been much worse. But that's iOS 6's fault. See Solving the iOS 6 Battery Drain Problems on the 28th of September 2012. If I don't sound entirely enthusiastic so far, then perhaps I should find something I can unreservedly endorse about the iPhone 5. And there is one outstanding enhancement that I can wholeheartedly praise, and that's the new AirPods. They are, at least in my ears, quite considerably more comfortable than previous iPhone and iPod earbuds. I hardly notice their presence. Their sound, too, is a marked improvement. While they're not quite up to the quality of my favourite Sony Studio Monitor headphones, they do reproduce a degree of detail and range that I've never heard, that I've never even expected from iPhone earbuds. As I write this, I'm listening to the Rolling Stones' Stupid Girl from the 1966 album Aftermath, and I'm hearing details of Brian Jones' acoustic guitar in my right ear that I don't remember hearing before. The AirPods come in their own little plastic carrying case inside the iPhone 5's box, although I suspect few users will have the patience to wrap them carefully back into the case after each use. The case is also their retail packaging. Yes, one of the most attractive and appealing parts of the new iPhone isn't even part of the iPhone, but an accessory that can be bought separately for $29. Worth upgrading. I'll be returning the iPhone 5 to Apple soon. Sadly, they want it back. It's always fun to have the latest, shiniest kit, and I'll miss it for sure, but going back to my iPhone 4S hasn't been at all troubling. If I didn't have another year left on my Vodafone service contract, I might consider upgrading, but I simply don't find enough in this new release to make it a compelling upgrade from the iPhone 4S at this stage. Were I upgrading from an iPhone 4, which lacks Siri and doesn't have as good a camera, the iPhone 5 would be more attractive, and moving up from an iPhone 3GS or earlier model would be even more compelling. For anyone in the market for their first iPhone, or replacing a broken iPhone, the iPhone 5 is hard to beat, with the main competition coming from the $99 iPhone 4S and the free iPhone 4. Put simply, the iPhone 5 is the best iPhone Apple has ever produced, but its improvements are worth only $100, the price difference to the iPhone 4S, which does have a comparable camera and Siri. That's entirely intentional on Apple's part, as Glenn Fleischman noted in Incremental Change Wins Apple Big Gains from the 29th of March 2012. Despite what many seem to think, and a bit of what Apple implies in its marketing, Apple seldom releases new products that are revolutionary, and the iPhone 5 is no exception. It's a great iPhone, and the best iPhone ever. But at the end of the day, it still looks, walks, and quacks like any other recent iPhone. This is Tidbits, sponsored in part this week by Bare Bones, Crash Plan, Smile, Intego, ScanSnap, and Das Keyboard. To follow links, make comments, read related articles, subscribe to our podcast, and get updates via email, RSS, Twitter, Facebook, and our iOS app, visit us at tidbits.com. I'm Steve McCabe, and thanks for listening. I hope we sounded great on your new Apple earbuds.